So the preferred customer system develops this process, and you need to know how the preferred customer system actually works. How do we develop preferred customers? Well, first we develop a new customer, somebody that has been exposed to the product and wants it, and then we begin to build a relationship through following up with that individual. That generates repeat sales and sometimes even add-on sales. Then we ask for referrals, and then we award them their preferred customer status and begin tracking what they want and surveying them. Now, there's a transition that goes on. A distributor transition to customer manager begins when a customer becomes a repeat customer. So we start out as a distributor or an unfranchise owner, and we need to transition ourselves into being a customer manager, because this is at the very heart of one-to-one marketing and the preferred customer system. And the process begins when a customer becomes a repeat customer. Now, what is a customer manager? A customer manager is somebody who takes charge of a preferred customer's product purchase portfolio and increases the value by increasing the share of that preferred customer. In other words, we're able to provide them more and more things on a repeat basis. That equals regenerated volume. So if you kind of look at this chart, you kind of get an idea of the potential and how this develops and what we're trying to accomplish. The preferred customer program is designed to increase the share of customers. So let's suppose a customer is purchasing so much right now from us. Then we want to increase that by add-on sales and identifying other products that they want that we can supply, and we bring them directly to them. We're not bothering them with anything that they don't want. But if you look at the yellow area, that's the potential for growth with that customer. That's the potential share of customer that we can increase. So we want to be finding more and more things that they want so that we can reduce that yellow section and keep increasing the new dollars spent. Now, the next chart shows that the preferred customers are already ordering over $100 per month on the average statistically, and that's growing, and it'll continue to grow as we add more programs and are more interactive and do more surveying. So if someone right now had 10 preferred customers, that's over $1,000 per month in retail sales, and we should easily be able to grow that to $200 per month, because that yellow area is the largest area, and there's so many things in one-to-one marketing that we can provide that customer. Now, mass customization is at the very heart of one-to-one marketing. And what is it? The mass production of individually customized goods and services produced in response to a particular customer's desire. So we're finding out specifically what people want and finding it for them, or bringing it to them, or supplying them with it. So let's take a look at the four types of mass customization. It's very important to understand that there's different types of mass customization: collaborative, adaptive, cosmetic, and transparent. So we use these four types of mass customization to bring customers what they want. You know, a lot of times people ask me, well, what do you sell? Well, the real answer is we sell whatever people want. Because you see, what we're doing is surveying our customers and tracking their buying habits and identifying what they want. And then through these four types of mass customization, we're bringing each customer exactly what they want. So let's define each one of these types of customization. Collaborative customization is when a distributor or customizer and the customer have a dialogue to help them define their needs. And through that conversation and that information, a customized product is made for them. So we're talking directly to the customer. We're finding out exactly what they want, and then we're making it for them. We're supplying them with it, or our manufacturer is making it for them. An example of this would be custom color match foundations. We work with the client, and then we match to their skin tone the perfect foundation. Custom color face is another example of collaborative customization. And now, even with isotonics, we're customizing a formula for each customer. So that is collaborative customization. Now, adaptive customization is when you provide a product or a service that makes it possible for the customer to customize it on their own. And examples of this with Market America would be the photo book or the gourmet cuisine store. Now, cosmetic customization is when a standard product is packaged specifically for each customer. Quite often, this will be a mass-produced product or a standardized product, but then we put their name on it or there might be a special color selection or even a special design selection. But an example of this is a customer's name is placed on each item, such as Market America's American Direct Quarterly. The next form of customization is transparent customization. And this right now is really the central focus and highest priority of Market America because we're poised to do it in a huge way by tracking what our preferred customers purchase, and by interacting with them or surveying them, we're able to identify things that they want. Now, transparent customization is when a customizer observes a customer's behavior without directly interacting with them or by collecting data on them, and then offers them their customized solution in a standard package. In other words, we're able to identify things that individuals want. And then as a product brokerage company, we source those things out and bring them to them. Now, just think, if you have thousands of preferred customers in your downline, each one of your unfranchised owners or customer managers having 10 preferred customers, and you have a total of hundreds or even thousands of preferred customers in your downline, what would happen if Market America, because you are interacting with these people and tracking their sales and surveying them, if Market America was able to identify just one product that each one of those people wanted every quarter? And let's suppose it had $25 BV, or $30 cost and $25 BV. Well, that would be 1,000 customers that would be receiving and ordering a $25 BV product, and that would accumulate up to $25,000 BV up your lines. Would that have an impact on your business? Our best efforts in collaborative customization are Motive's Custom Foundation, Motive's Custom Color Palette, Motive's Custom Lipstick. Our best efforts with transparent customization are Glucosa Trend and South Beach Diet, because we actually came out with these things because we identified a need that many, many people wanted through surveying, okay, and through your input. So we have questionnaires or surveys that we send out. And here's an example of one that we actually did. Have you ever been on a diet? And what aspect do you consider most important when you diet? Is it that it's easy to follow, that it fits into my lifestyle? Is it effective? And when you diet, do you take nutritional supplements? And if Market America came out with a diet, would you be interested? Well, 88% of the people answered yes, that they've been on a diet. 23% said they wanted something that was easy to follow. 33% said that it fits into my lifestyle. 44% said it was most important and that it be effective. So 71% also took nutritional supplements. And then 85% would be interested if Market America came out with a diet. The conclusions were obvious. There was a definite need for a weight loss program. Diets did not work in the past for these people, and the diet should include nutritional supplements, and it must be effective, and it should be compatible with their lifestyle. The result was the South Beach diet. Now, by knowing individually who wants that, we can actually go to them then, or have you contact them, or the company can contact them if you so desire, and take the order. Now, collaborative customization is in process. We're in the process of pioneering the way in this area. And examples are the American Tailor Program, the custom Creo shoes, the custom formula isotonics, and custom third-party websites. So you see, it's actually happening. Now, American Tailor Program is a collaborative effort to manufacture and distribute mass customized clothing through one-to-one marketing. And as time goes on, more mass customizers will be coming to us. And there'll be more avenues and more vendors and more products. We're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. We're getting stronger with technological innovations, with better communications, with improved human resources that are focusing on this. And with time, you're going to see more and more collaborative customization and mass customized shoes. Custom Creo shoes, we've been doing a test market. Again, we're pioneering the way. But it's a collaborative and adaptive mix of mass customization of shoes facilitated by one-to-one marketing and advanced internet technology. And quite often, we'll use the internet in actually taking the order or making the selections. So again, you can see how important the custom web page and internet access is and interactivity with the company over the internet. Custom Formula Isotonics, again, is another collaborative and transparent and cosmetic customization approach to vitamin, mineral, and herbal supplementation facilitated by one-to-one marketing and internet technology and advanced manufacturing capabilities. Because we survey people over the internet, we collect the data, and then we're able to customize that product through manufacturing for them. But you see, we're really identifying who wants it and who wants what. And by being able to identify what people's needs are and what people's nutritional profile or health profile or lifestyle profile is, we can identify who wants these products. Then we can actually customize it for them based on their lifestyle, based on their nutritional needs. And then we even do cosmetic customization because we put their name on it. And I think you're going to see more and more customization in the area of health and nutrition. And the process here is simple. There's an online health survey, and then we return the information to them after we get the survey on the formulas that they should have and the cost. Then we process the order, and then there's delivery within 10 days. And, of course, we've already done an online survey, and here's an example of one. You can see, very easy questions to answer. Based on that data, we're then able to identify customers that would want this and customize a product for them. And, of course, customized isotonics has been a big hit. And just imagine, as time goes on, customers are going to repeat over and over and over again because that formula was made specifically for them. It's important to understand, though, that this process of one-to-one marketing or mass customization doesn't eliminate the customer manager. It depends on the customer manager. Sometimes there's a misconception that goes around that what Market America is trying to do is deal directly with everybody's customer. Nothing could be further from the truth. Market America deals directly with the manufacturer. From the information it gets from the customer manager and from the customer, we're able to have the manufacturer supply customized products, or we can source out products from manufacturers. But then the customer manager deals directly with the customer. They have to be involved in order to get the information and the data and the measurements and the selections for a customized product. And quite often that'll be done over the website or over the internet or by visiting them and then inputting it on the internet. But there has to be direct contact and a relationship there. And when we do transparent customization, we're totally reliant on the customer manager to get the information and get the data or do the survey so we can source out products for those customers. When it comes time for delivery of the product, the manufacturer delivers to Market America, and we deliver to the customer manager or distributor or franchise owner, and they service the customer. Now, if you want us to, we will ship the product directly to the customer, and you'll get credit for it. But we communicate directly with the customer, keeping them up to date on products that they may be interested in or that they might want, or conduct surveys through Market America Direct to the customer. So they receive either over the internet, electronically, or they can put on a subscription so that they get kept up to date. Now, this is important because how many times through your organization are there customers that are buying a particular type of product and we identify another product that they would be interested in as an add-on sale because it relates to the first product and they didn't know about it for months or years or maybe never knew about it? Well, by being a preferred customer, they're going to find out about that. For instance, there were so many people that would have been interested in OPC3 when we first came out with it because they were already using Thermochrome. But many people didn't find out about it or know about it because there was just a casual relationship with some part-time distributor who really just took an order every once in a while. So they were never made aware of it. But American Direct ensures that they'd be made aware of it, and those orders would then be coming up through your organization. So the Preferred Customer Program is the future of Market America. And we're going forward with the future. If you're going to go forward with the future, you need to get on board and you need to be developing preferred customers because it's the foundation of the business. And, of course, the target is, the bullseye is, more market-driven products. And what determines if a product's market-driven? By how many people who want it. So by identifying exactly who wants what and what people want, we can bring it to market. We do the reverse of what most companies do. They choose a product they think that there's a market for, and they try to get market share. They give everybody the same message. They try to force it down everybody's throat. They bombard them with advertising. And quite often, they're trying to persuade people who really don't want something to buy it. We do the reverse. We find out what people want or need first, and then source it out and bring it to them. So in order to do this, we have to establish interactive communications between our best customers, which are our preferred customers, our customer managers, which are our distributors and unfranchised owners, and Market America to provide our customers exactly what they want. And of course, the use of the internet and the web pages facilitates this whole process and makes it possible. Now, our one-to-one goal by April 30th of 2004 is to have 100,000 customer managers with 10 preferred customers each, or 1 million preferred customers that we're tracking. And just imagine the commonalities that we can identify of things that people want. But not only will we know that there's a market for that, or that 10,000 people want widget A, or 5,000 people want widget B, or 20,000 people want widget C, we'll know exactly who the person is that want it, so we can go back to them when we source that product out and deliver it to them and bring to them what they wanted. Now, we're at important crossroads. There's no doubt that there's a paradigm shift going on that's going to have tremendous economic consequences in the future. It'll make many people rich. There's a paradigm shift from mass production and mass marketing to one-to-one marketing and mass customization. And the fact is that we are leading the parade and pioneering the way. But it's also a fact that we need more distributors to become customer managers to make this happen. Do you want to be part of history in the making? Do you want to be a pioneer that in the future will be very, very successful and very, very wealthy because you got with a trend and led the parade rather than following the parade? So the fact is that we need to develop preferred customers, and we need more distributors to become customer managers, and they become customer managers by developing preferred customers and then building the share of customer by introducing more and more things that that customer has identified that they want. And then we need to develop better relationships with our customers so that we're interactive and communicating and helping them find what they want. And we need to collect information. We need to be tracking data on their purchases. So we need to know what you're selling your customers. And we need to conduct surveys. So what's the solution? Well, there's been some misunderstandings and maybe some resistance to the preferred customer program in its early stages, and we keep fine-tuning. At this point, registration fees are optional. Only if someone wants to get an actual physical hard copy of American Direct are they going to have to pay the $10 registration fee. We're trying to reduce all of this and do it electronically. So we now have options where the registration fees are optional. So there's no reason not to sign up a preferred customer. 100% of the retail profits and 100% of the BV go to the customer manager or distributor or unfranchised owner. Preferred customers now will get discounts and loyalty awards for repeat purchases. And so that really gives a preferred customer an incentive to order from you and to repeat order and to give us information when we ask for it in surveys. And then we have customer manager software so you can better track and interact with your preferred customers and serve their needs even better. And then we're going to recognize the preferred customer and the customer manager for a job well done. Now, as far as the registration fees go, you can submit the registration form with $10, and your preferred customer will receive all the benefits, but they won't get an American Direct. Now, if you want them to get the American Direct, you can arrange that. There's an optional $10 registration fee, and then they'll receive all the preferred customer benefits and 4 quarterly American Direct. So you choose which way you want to go with a preferred customer. And then we'll also make American Direct available for purchase so that you can inventory them, have them, and just hand them out to your preferred customers or customers that you want to make into preferred customers. As far as the net retail profits go, 100% of the net retail profit will go to the customer manager, and 100% of the BV will be credited to the customer manager. Now, here's some added preferred customer benefits. Additional related information provided electronically or through American Direct. When we identify that a person's interested in a certain type of product, we'll be able to send them information, updates, and really keep them informed. When a person likes a certain type of product, they want to be educated. And with each survey completed, a preferred customer receives entries in the preferred customer sweepstakes to win a valuable prize or valuable prizes. So we're going to give them an incentive to give us the information that we need to bring them what they want. Now, the process of developing preferred customers is about identifying your very best customer and trying to increase your share of customer to increase the lifetime value of that customer by selling them more and more items that they want and need. So we're going to categorize the preferred customers based on how valuable they are and how good of a customer they are. And we're also going to be able to give them rewards for consistent purchases and being a very good preferred customer. So the preferred customer will be able to earn added service incentives based on their level. And when a person becomes a preferred customer or is awarded the preferred customer status when they made two purchases, they become a Ruby preferred customer when they are purchasing $300 quarterly. They become an Emerald preferred customer when they purchase $450 quarterly. And they become a Diamond preferred customer when they order $600 quarterly. So what are the preferred customer level incentives? This chart shows it, I think, very effectively. A preferred customer gets toll-free ordering. They get email promotion where we're sending them information about certain products that they've indicated they're interested in and educating them. They're able to do electronic ordering. They get one sweepstakes entry for a prize, and they get a 5% discount. So you're going to provide them a 5% discount out of your retail, and who wouldn't want to do that for somebody who's developing into a preferred customer and providing you information and giving you repeat orders? A Ruby level also gets toll-free ordering, email promotions, electronic ordering, and they get two sweepstakes entries, and they also become involved in new product test marketing. In the future, we'll be sending products out or test marketing products through our Ruby and above preferred customers. And that's a tremendous advantage. And they would receive a 10% discount provided by the distributor. Okay, then an Emerald level preferred customer, again, gets toll-free ordering, email promotion, electronic ordering, and they get one sweepstakes entries for product orders, and they get three sweepstakes entries for completing surveys. They, too, would be involved in new product testing, and they get a 10% discount. So the difference there is they're getting a sweepstakes entry for product orders, and they're getting three sweepstakes entries for completing surveys rather than two, as in the Ruby. The Diamond level is the same, except they get two sweepstake entries for product orders, and they get four sweepstake entries for completing surveys, and they get a 15% discount. So it's a powerful program. It really provides a wonderful incentive for a preferred customer that you're servicing. Now, in addition to this, for you, the customer manager and the unfranchised owner or distributor will have customer manager software. The customer manager reports will be provided through the internet and through the software, giving you access to personal information on your preferred customer, sales order history, total tax paid, and follow-up reports of when they're ordering and when they're not ordering. And if you have the customer manager reports and your customers are on there and you're reporting their sales and their orders, no Form 1000 will be required if there's $200 per quarter in retail sales. This gives you a great reason to be reporting all your sales of your preferred customers as well as allowing them to order electronically, which is very, very efficient. And on top of this, there'll be recognition. We were going to recognize the preferred customer of the quarter, and that'll be in the Powerline or American Direct, and the customer manager of the year will be recognized. What a great honor that is. And then there'll be the Emerald Award Certificate and integration with the UFO program, where you have to develop preferred customers in order to get recognition in the UFO program as it already exists. Now, the Emerald Award that I just mentioned, the certificate, the Emerald Award Certificate, or the EAC, what is it? An EAC provides a preferred customer or Ruby status preferred customer the opportunity to receive Emerald status benefits for 12 months without earning the status through product purchases. So what is this EAC? The purpose of an EAC is to allow a customer manager the flexibility to reward a preferred customer with Emerald or Diamond status potential as an added incentive to increase their purchases with them by giving them a deeper discount and better odds of winning a preferred customer sweepstakes prize. So if you see a customer that you really like or you really feel has potential, you can do something very nice for them. You can immediately move them to the Emerald level. You simply need to purchase a certificate and you get BV for it. So, folks, it's time to take action and lead the parade in mass customization and one-to-one marketing. And can you see how this builds a solid retail base and how this creates a higher retail coefficient, making your business stronger and requiring fewer unfranchised owners, distributors, and customer managers for you to hit checks on a regular basis. Now that we have established a strong retail basis and understand number three of the basic five, and we have mastered the fundamental of developing retail and merchandising products and developing preferred customers, we're ready to duplicate that. It's not what one unfranchised can do. It's what thousands of unfranchises can do. It's just like it's not what one McDonald's does that makes McDonald's a multi-billion dollar enterprise. It's what thousands of McDonald's can do. But each one of them has a solid retail business. And each unfranchised owner has a solid merchandising system and retail base of preferred customers that are regenerating orders on a monthly basis. Now, to multiply our profits, we simply need to duplicate that process and develop distribution. And we're going to develop two distribution organizations duplicating this whole process of merchandising and retailing and preferred customers through our whole one-to-one marketing and mass customization efforts. Now remember, duplication is the key to the business. And how do we duplicate more unfranchises and customer managers? We do it through the process of prospecting, recruiting, and sponsoring. So that brings us to the fourth component of the Basic Five, the sponsoring process. And for some reason, there's more interest in the sponsoring process than any other component of the Basic Five. I guess it's because everybody knows that you need the right people in order to make big money at the business, and they're looking for the secret or the magic key to finding the right people. But really, it should be the easiest component of the Basic Five. It actually is the easiest of all the components of the Basic Five once you understand it and master some basic techniques. It should be like breathing. It's almost impossible not to sponsor. It should be as natural as breathing. See, I believe that if we believe in the business, it's impossible not to sponsor. If you have the right attitude and have developed the fundamental knowledge to build the business, it's impossible not to sponsor, because as we interact with people that we know or people that we meet on a day-to-day basis, they'll either complain or ask questions about what we're doing, or they'll tell us about their wishes or their dreams or the way they like things to be. In other words, they actually bring it up. They actually give you the opportunity. And if you are aware and prepared, they'll end up actually recruiting you. But the first thing that you have to understand is that sponsoring is a process. The reason why people don't sponsor the right people or enough people or the people to activate is because they really don't have anybody to sponsor. Think about it. If you really want to be successful, if you really want the 2 to 3 year plan, the only reason you're not a director or not making $109,000 a year is that you don't have the right people yet. And if you believe and if you develop the right attitude and knowledge and you really want the 2 to 3 year plan, then I ask, why don't you just go out and get them? Well, you see, the answer is simple, because you don't have anybody to call to show the plan to. You don't have anybody interested. So in order to successfully sponsor, we have to have people that are interested or that are curious, so we can get to evaluate the business and show them the program. Well, if you don't have anybody to call to show the program to, you don't have anybody to recruit. So in order to sponsor, we have to recruit. But who are you going to recruit? Who are you going to call to show the plan to if you haven't developed any possibilities, if you haven't developed anybody that's interested or curious or wants to evaluate the program? So you see, it's a process that involves prospecting first in order to develop the possibilities. Once we have possibilities, some of those people are going to start to express an interest. And that's when the recruiting process begins, to get them to evaluate it to see if they know the right people or if they'd be interested themselves. And by recruiting, which means inviting people to see the plan and then actually showing them the plan, we end up finding people who want to give it a trial run or who want to do the business, and then we begin the sponsoring process. The problem is people don't focus enough on the prospecting recruiting process. In fact, recruiting is a solution to every problem that someone could possibly have in the business. Let's suppose they say, geez, I'm not growing. Great. Recruit and sponsor more people. I'm not making enough money. Great. Get some new people. My distributors won't listen. Fabulous. Get some new people. That's the solution. Hey, I can't get someone to go to the convention. No problem. Go get some new people. I'm lopsided and have more volume on one leg than the other, and it's causing me not to earn as many checks as I could. Great. Sponsor some more people in that unbalanced or that weaker leg. I don't have anyone that will do kickoffs in the ABC pattern. Great. Sponsor some more people. Start prospecting, recruiting, and sponsoring. I didn't reach my goal. No problem. Reach it next time by prospecting, recruiting, and sponsoring. Recruit more people. You see, so often when someone says, well, my group isn't really growing, it's simply a matter that you're not sponsoring and they've duplicated you. Now, I think we all realize that the MPCP, the binomial system, really only requires two good people, two good leaders that are totally go now, that become unfranchise owners, through which we develop organizations. So if you understand that, what that really means is that we just have to develop two solid organizations. You don't have to build 6 to 10 to 20 normally to make $1,500 to $2,100 a week. One would have to build 20 to 35 organizations. To make $2,100 a month, they'd have to build 10 to 20 organizations in a traditional marketing program. But in the binomial system, we can earn more by just building two. So when we say it just takes two good people, what that means is it just takes two good organizations. And the probability of developing two good organizations, two solid organizations, by just sponsoring two people is pretty slim. Now, it can happen, but you see, you're leaving your timing up to them. Your timing is dependent on those two people that you're depending on to develop the business through. Why not sponsor more than two people to increase the probability that you'll hit your goal when you want to hit it, to give you more control over the process? In fact, this program was designed to sponsor more than two people. So that doesn't mean that you just sponsor two people and stop. And the process of prospecting, recruiting, and sponsoring, even when we have two good people, is something that we never stop doing. We just never stop doing it. Some things are a process, and we never stop doing them. Think, in religion, you don't stop going to church. In education, if one's a scholar, they don't stop studying. In sports, if someone enjoys a sport or is doing it competitively, they don't stop practicing. In music, if someone wants to be good and they enjoy it and they love it, or they're doing it professionally, they don't stop rehearsing. And in Market America, sponsoring is a process. We never stop sponsoring or doing the basic five. It's the business. You see, some things you're just never finished. Again, in religion, you're never finished going to church. In education, you're never finished studying. In sports, you're never finished practicing. In music, you're never finished rehearsing. And in Market America, you're never finished sponsoring. How do you finish the basic five? It's simply the business, and you should enjoy it. If you enjoy the business and you want to grow, we're sponsoring and we're doing the basic five. And if you're not growing, I can assure you it's because your group duplicated you. You see, somewhere along the line, you stopped doing the basic five. You stopped sponsoring. And your group duplicated. After all, people do what you do, not what you say. So you can tell them to sponsor, but if you're not sponsoring, they're not going to sponsor. We lead by example. And you see, in this business, continuing to sponsor is the best method and best remedy and best technique to solidifying a leg so that it's flushing every single week. So if a leg isn't flushing every week, you're not done the job. Okay, and then, of course, you're going to have additional centers to qualify, and then you're going to be doing reentries. If you have a goal that's bigger than $1,500 or $2,100 a week, so we would continue sponsoring. In fact, once you're successful, I don't understand how you stop sponsoring because people want to know what you do. So, you see, the bottom line, if you're not earning a check every single week on your 001, or if you have other centers that you've opened as an unfranchised owner and want to earn them those and you're not earning every single week, you simply need more unfranchised owners in your organizations. So you need to focus on prospecting, recruiting, and sponsoring. You need to prospect, recruit, and sponsor more. And it would be wise to begin in your weaker legs because you have a great economic incentive to continue sponsoring in those legs. Why? Because it's going to earn you checks. If someone's brand new, they have two weak legs that have just started out, and they want to activate. So there should be a strong focus on prospecting, recruiting, and sponsoring. And this is something that we should master. Look at why the binomial marketing program is designed to handle more sponsoring. Some people think because in this program it only requires two legs and you potentially could sponsor two good people and become successful, that means it's designed to handle less sponsoring. But actually, it's designed to handle more sponsoring. This is a prospector recruiter's dream. You see, when I developed the binomial system, not only did we look at the fact that the average person doesn't build 10 or 20 or 30 organizations. In fact, rarely do they even build six. The average is 2.8. They sponsor 2.8 active people that have, organizations that are growing. That was one reason. But, and simple logic says if you design a program based on what you already know people do because of the statistical averages rather than what a company wants them to do, the probability of individual success goes way up. But you see, there's another reason. We rethought the entire process right from the beginning when this program was developed. I wanted to maximize the efficiency of the plan so that it required fewer people and less volume to make the most money possible. So the fewer organizations one needs to build to make X amount of dollars, the more efficient the program is. But you see, you can't pass money or profit just down one single organization or one line from person to person, or you'll run out of money. That's pretty easy to figure out. You need a multiplier or a divisor in order for multiple people to earn in succession. It can't be all the same volume. There has to be some additional volume that each person generates. Well, the smallest divisor or multiplier is the number two. So we figured out the maximum payout that could be paid and still have a solid company on just two organizations, which is $2,100 on the $5,000 and $5,000 or $10,000 and $10,000. So instead of sponsoring more people in width and building more organizations in width, we sponsor in depth in the same two organizations, which helps everybody to get there faster and to earn more money. A totally different mindset, a totally different dynamics. Then when you maximize your profits on the two organizations and you're at the $2,100 cap, you're able to re-enter and double your income with that re-entry and then open another one and triple it. And of course, we again sponsor people under the re-entry centers, the new centers. And we're not going wide, spreading ourselves thinner and thinner and thinner, or going into competition with our existing group. But you see, this program is designed to sponsor more because it accelerates the process. When you contrast that against a multi-level marketing program versus the management performance compensation program with our binomial system, it's amazing. Because look at this slide. In MLM, you have to build 10 to 20 organizations in width. And width is profitability. The reason for that is in order for you to make any money, you have to have numerous people doing less than you in width below you. So to create an aggregate volume for yourself is much higher than their individual volumes. That puts you at a higher payout percentage and them at a much lower payout percentage, so you make a greater differential. But they're not going to stay there unless they grow and begin to make money too and have some stability. So you have to build depth down each one of those organizations, and each organization that you add on and build is in competition with all the other organizations. Depth is security, and without security, they fall off the other end because they have to make some money too. But you have to work width in order to have profitability, and you get no profitability from building depth or security. In fact, as these groups grow and move up the pay scale, as they make more, you end up making less. But you see, you can't build profitability and security at the same time in a traditional multi-level program. How many plates can you spin all at the same time? That's the beauty of the MPCP. It doesn't mean that we stop sponsoring, but instead of sponsoring in width in order to maintain profitability, we sponsor in depth down two organizations to accelerate our profitability. I say accelerate because you get there to the top payout level much faster. Then when we earn the maximum of $2,100 a week, we don't go into competition with our group and have to build in width. we re-enter in depth, which solidifies our organizations even more. And the most remarkable thing about the program is that everybody between you and your re-entries is getting credit for that volume too, giving even more stability and strength to the organization. In fact, if everybody disappeared between your 001 and your 002 and 003 or your re-entries, you'd still be getting paid on your 001 by virtue of what's being done in the re-entries, in the 002 or the 003 or re-entries down below, because that volume counted for your 001 also. It's the most remarkable system ever created, but it's designed to sponsor. Now, I really believe that it's important to understand why this program is designed to sponsor more and why it pays off to continue sponsoring more down each one of your organizations. So let's look at it so that we understand it at a traditional multi-level organization. Now, I call this is a diffusion principle. In most organizations, you have to hit a threshold to be a manager, and that's where you really start to make money. In this example, it's $5,000. But in order to do that $5,000, your energies and efforts have to be diffused amongst numerous people that are doing considerable less to create a differential from your aggregate volume level and their individual volume levels. Here, their volume levels are 500 each, and yours is 5,000. And in this example, you have 10 organizations in width. So 10 times 500 is 5,000. At 5,000, you're at a 25% payout, and each of your groups are at a 5% payout. Therefore, you make 20% on each one of these groups, or $1,000. So let's look at it a step further. This diffusion principle. You're spread very thin. You must build legs separately. Imagine each one of those legs you have to build separately because those people are in competition with each other and get no benefit from your work with each one of them or their individual work. However, in a binomial system, everybody has a common interest, a common economic interest, creating tremendous synergy because we're sponsoring those people one under another. Okay, so everyone is in competition with each other. There's no synergy, requires more work and time, and there's fewer people as a result earning checks, which means no security without building depth in all 10 of those legs separately. It's incredible how powerful this is when you compare it to the binomial system. So let's use the same example in a binomial configuration. And if we put the same 10 people in each organization, you'd have built half of their organizations at the same time. You'd be earning $1,200 in this example, and each of them at the top, your two personally sponsored people, would be earning $600 if, of course, they built the second leg, because you're basically developing half of their organization by sponsoring under them and giving them a great incentive to build the second one. But none of them are in competition and everybody's working together. You're not spread thin because you're sponsoring in depth, working depth rather than width. There's synergy between all the people that you're sponsoring. They're not in competition with each other and you're not going in competition with your group. And there's an incentive for everybody to sponsor the second leg, which results in leveraging more volume and more people earning checks. It's powerful. But you know, in that multi-level scenario, if you look at this chart, it shows what actually happens in the diffusion principle. As you're building those 10 legs, you have to build depth in each one of them separately. And as they move up the scale from 200 to 500 to 900 to 1500 to 2000 to 2500 all the way up 5000, look what happens. Their percentage payout goes up and your percent payout goes down because it's a difference between 25% and what they're being paid. Well, as they're getting paid a higher percentage, your net percentage goes down. So as you build their organization and they grow, they make more and you make less. So you actually end up making less on each one of them as they grow. Then they reach the top of the scale like you at 5,000 and they break away and you must replace their volume by sponsoring more. So as they grow, they make more and you make less, and then you got to replace their volume and sponsor more. So the next slide shows what has to be done in order to solidify these people. If you just put them in the business and they're at 500 and you're at 5,000, you're making all the money. They're not going to stay in the business unless they start to grow too. So we work with each one of them to help them sponsor 10. They have to duplicate this. They each have to have 10. That would mean that you have 100 people in an organization, plus you have 10 on level one, plus 10 more that you'll need to sponsor to replace the original 10, is 120 people in the organization. So Now you're going to start making money, but you have 120 people in that organization. Now, if we were to do that in the binomial configuration, what would happen? If we took that 120 and put six in the left organization and six in the right organization in any configuration, you'd be making $2,100 a week or $6,300 a month, and your two personally sponsored or first-level people would be earning $1,500 per week. Now, it could be somebody down in debt that actually started to grow, but the first person to build is, that has a second organization and balances out would be earning $1,500 a week or $4,500 a month. Plus, within each one of those configurations of six people, you'd have several others earning checks of $300 to $600 per week. The point is, in the binomial system, it's much more profitable to sponsor. Now, with that in mind, let's look at a single center and a supervisory entry center in the MPCP or binomial system. Let's see if there's a way through sponsoring if you can't almost guarantee the result and when you'll earn a check. Let's suppose you had no one and you were just getting started. Now, if you wanted to have control over your progress and not depend on other people's timing, you need to sponsor enough people in each leg to ensure that it'll qualify on a weekly basis. We surveyed the top earners and top success stories in the business, and everyone that we talked to concurred that if you had four go now in a leg or an organization, and what I mean by that is four go now dedicated, committed, unfranchised owners that would do whatever it took, it would be nearly impossible for that leg not to qualify within that year on a regular basis. And what I mean by that, it would be flushing at 5,000 to 5,000 every single week. In fact, have some other people earning in each leg so that you were getting $1,500 to $2,100 a week every single week on those centers. And it's something about four go nows in a leg that reaches critical mass because of the synergy between them, because they're working together, because of the momentum. And you see, if you bring one person in, you have somebody to work with, but you're really dependent on their timing. If you put two people in that leg, well, you have a little synergy. And if you put three people in that leg, you have some momentum, and they're all working together. Now, if you're waiting for one person or two person to sponsor the other people, you don't really have control over when it'll happen. But then when you put four in a leg, it's almost like it hits critical mass. And they're going to go on and build the business with you or without you. There's just something magical about that number. Now, certainly, you could hope that other people brought the go-nows in. But why allow your timing to be dependent on their timing? My goodness, somebody can go crazy. They can get mentally constipated. They can have problems at work. They can have a marital dispute. They can get divorced. They can move away. All types of things can happen. And if we want to have absolute control that we're going to hit a goal and absolutely be able to guarantee it based on our own efforts, the way to do that is by sponsoring more. So think about this. If you were to sponsor four in a leg, in each of your two legs in a single center, that's a total of eight. That's going to yield, if you fully develop that center, $109,000 a year. And if we were to develop three centers or a supervisory entry, we're basically going to be doing that twice or developing four go-nows in four legs for a total of 16. That's $327,000 a year plus the time and freedom that you want because you're not tied to a job. Can you see why sponsoring is such a critical function if you want to control the timing of your success? Don't wait for other people to duplicate it and do it. You do it. You prime the pump, and then you're going to get there a lot faster. I have to make it clear that just because some people earn this type of money, that not everyone will or does. And you almost have to ask the question, well, if it's so great, why doesn't everyone do it? Well, first of all, they don't sponsor eight. They sponsor one. They don't sponsor one, four in each leg. They sponsor one. And sometimes that person's timing isn't right or something goes wrong and it planes out. So that's no excuse, though. We shouldn't depend on them. You know, the answer is very, very simple. Even though most people have professed their entire life, the type of freedom and income and lifestyle that this business could bring is what they've always wanted, what they've always hoped for, what they've always dreamed of. But when it comes right down to doing it, some people won't even try. Others won't make the necessary commitment, and they won't put the necessary time and effort in. It does take some work. And it does take mastering the basic five, but it's not something that you can't do. This is your best shot at making it. And it's a lot easier than working the 45-year plan. So think about it.
work the 45-year plan, and at the end of that 45 years, what's the probability of being financially independent? You know the statistics. Or master the basic five and continue sponsoring. I mean, if that's a trade-off, is if you want to guarantee it, you continue sponsoring people down those legs and put four in a leg and then work the ABC pattern, and you have a lot more control over your success. But the reason that people do not recruit or have difficulty recruiting is only because they do not have the prospects to recruit. They do not have anyone. So, you see, we must prospect before we recruit. How are you going to sponsor anyone if you don't have anyone interested to show the plan to? So, simply put, the reason that people don't sponsor is because they don't have anyone to call up to show the plan to recruit. And the reason that they don't have anybody to show the plan to is that they have not developed any interest. They haven't cultivated any interest or curiosity through prospecting. So it is a process. We have to prospect first in order to recruit, and then we recruit in order to sponsor. So the whole process begins with prospecting or developing possibilities. So the key is developing and cultivating possibilities. And every day, if we were to develop two new relationships or rekindle two old relationships, two per day over a year would be 720 possibilities per year. And you only need two good people. You would definitely be able to put four people in every leg. You wouldn't care who got in. And if you did four per day, that'd be 1,460 possibilities per year. It'd be impossible not to find the four good go-now people per leg in order to guarantee it. And certainly you're going to find the two that you need in order to qualify your 001 Business Development Center. So you see, we have to stop recruiting, stop trying to get people in, and we have to start prospecting so that we have people that want to get in, that are interested, that will evaluate it and lead to the people that we need. Now, a beautiful example or illustration, little demonstration that I think illustrates this, is what I call the bean jars. Now, you might want to do this demonstration for yourself or for the distributors that you're training. Get a big gallon pickle jar and empty it, and then clean it. Then fill it with small beans. Black-eyed beans work just great. Then put 8 walnuts down in the jar near the bottom. Push them down. Filling the jar with beans is very much like the prospecting process. I'm filling the jar with lots of possibilities. And each bean represents a person or a possibility that I've met or a person that I knew from the past that I've rekindled an old relationship with. Or it could be people that you already know right now. But I want as many possibilities in that jar as I can fit. Then I began shaking the bean jar vigorously. This represents cultivating possibilities by staying in contact with them and cultivating the relationship and working to build interest. People can only talk about three things: what's happening, how rotten things are or complaining, or the way they wish things were. And if they talk about a talk with you for a couple minutes, they always seem to end up complaining or wishing, which gives you the opportunity to build interest or curiosity. Now, if you already knew them, they're always going to ask you, well, what are you doing now? The point is that you don't have to get them in right away. You can build interest. You don't have to get them the first time you talk to them. They're not going anywhere. You can see them again and again and again. And you can always add more and more names or possibilities. And you really can't tell who will be interested or who's right or ready for the business. I learned a long time ago that not everybody's ready or right for the business. But almost everyone knows at least two people who are. And see, they lead to more possibilities. And it's really a numbers game. And probability works in your favor, works on your side when dealing with large numbers. So just don't be dependent on two or three people or 10 people. So by shaking the jar, I'm cultivating possibilities. I'm cultivating interest by massaging their mind, by cultivating the relationship, by getting back to them. And those who are interested or ready start rising to the top. So after shaking the jar vigorously for about 30 seconds, the walnuts rise to the top. It's an amazing demonstration. Now these are your go-now distributors that rise to the top, the walnuts. Shaking the bean jar is a prospecting and recruiting process. I always have to laugh when the walnuts finally rise to the top. I joke when those eight walnuts sit there on the top. And I tell people that it just goes to prove that the biggest nuts always rise to the top. But what would happen if I just put two beans in the jar and shook it vigorously? Or even 8 to 10 beans? And I never find the go-nows who really want to see the plan, who want the business, and who are ready to go now. You see, you have to prospect first. You have to fill the bean jar with possibilities. Then you don't care who gets in. And it's just a matter of shaking it up, which means that I'm building interest, and then I'm recruiting them when they're interested by showing them the plan. And your timing isn't dependent on other people's timing. I determine how long I shake that bean jar, and I know because there's enough beans in it, I'm going to find the walnuts or the go-nows. Now, another way to illustrate this is to pour a jar or a bag of beans and nuts through a funnel. The beans pass through, and in the funnel, you end up with 8 walnuts or go-now distributors. So how do you begin the process of filling the funnel? How do you begin filling the bean jar so that you have enough possibilities to begin the recruiting and sponsoring process? Well, you begin by making a list, but not just a list of 2 to 10 people. So many people make the mistake in the beginning of thinking, well, I do need to activate, so who are the 2 people that can get in? And they might make a list of 2 to 5 people, maybe 10 even. And then when those people aren't ready or aren't interested or they can't get a hold of them or they get a couple no's, they give up mentally. They quit mentally. So when I'm bringing a new person into the business, I make sure that they understand that what we're trying to do is screen through as many people as possible to find the very best 2 people or best 4 people to make their life easy, to make their business strong so that they don't have to do as much work and they'll have an ongoing income as a result of it, a residual income for years to come of potentially $109,000 or more per year. But they don't want to have to make the business difficult and work really hard and have to constantly be rebuilding because they don't take on the very best people. In other words, we just don't want to take the first 2 people off the street or the first 2 people that they think of. And we're not trying to get people in. What we want to do is get as many people to evaluate it as possible so that they lead to the right people, to the very best people. It's really a screening process. So over the next 90 days, we're going to do a talent search. We're going to do a screening process. We're going to go through a human resources or HR process to identify the very best 2 people for the job to make your job easier. And think about it. Think in terms of a sports team. There's 22 starting players on a football team, but they don't take the first 11 players for defense and the first 11 players for offense to walk on the field. Sure, they have a draft and they have a tryout, and they screen through literally hundreds of players. And even when they pick their first team, they have another set of players on the bench to back them up. And then there's a roster of people that are out there waiting that they can call up. And, you know, same thing with a basketball team or baseball team. They don't take the first people that walk on the field. They have tryouts and they have spring training or, you know, preseason camp and preseason games. And they really try out. Same thing if the Phantom of the Opera was starting up or a Broadway play. How many people audition for those roles? Literally thousands. Or an orchestra. How many people audition for each seat? They just don't take the first person that walks in and says that I want to, you know, play. And even in business, think about it. If you were hiring executive vice presidents or vice presidents to run a company, a multi-million dollar company, first HR would do a resource search, a human resource search, and come up with many candidates. They would look at the resumes. They would screen that down, and then there'd probably be even hundreds of people that they contacted or interviewed until it was whittled down to 10, 20 people that you interview before you select the very best one. So certainly there's a screening process in anything to get the very best people. So what makes this any different? We're talking about making $109,000 to $327,000 a year upward and running a multi-million dollar business here, and you're in the process of hiring your executive vice presidents or 2 presidents of 2 unfranchised organizations or companies that you're going to be overseeing, and you want to bring in the very best people. So I try to get people right from the beginning looking at this and perceiving it a little bit differently than maybe the way you're doing it. It's a different mindset. I want them to be looking at this over a year process of screening through people, getting them to evaluate it, not to get them in, but to get them to evaluate the program because they may know the right people. Now, indeed, they may be interested, and quite often they are, but that's not the focus. See, I don't want them to feel like they're imposing on anyone's relationship, or that they're trying to talk somebody into something, or they're trying to sell someone. We simply want them to evaluate the program because they may know the right people. Remember, not everybody's right for this, and not everybody's ready. So I'm really not after them. But everybody knows two people who are. Two people that have done something like this, two people that are entrepreneurial, two people that are trying to diversify their income, two people that have been in network marketing, two people that have been in direct sales, two people that are in real estate or insurance that are looking for something beyond that where they don't have to start over every time they make a sale. And we're going to get those people to evaluate it. So we want as many sources as possible. The key to filling the funnel is understanding that it's a numbers game. And, you know, you can play little mind games with yourself in order to jog your memory to think of people. Go through the phone book, the yellow pages, and look at every business in there and think about who you know that runs one of those businesses or owns one of those businesses. They're excellent candidates. Everything in your house that you bought, where did you buy it? Hey, that person owes you an audience. And everything that you need to get fixed in your house. Those service people are fabulous prospects, or at least conduits or windows to find the right people, because they'll evaluate it and may know the right people. Of course, you're going to look at your Christmas card list and your address book or phone book at the clubs that you're in, the charities that you're in, the church that you go to, the school that you attended, any organizations or affiliations that you have naturally are sources. But remember, new sources are the best. Remember what I learned years ago when I got 20 no's in a row and my sponsor told me, hey, JR, the reason that you're having difficulty is you're a little wet behind the ears, you're young, and these people know you. How many people don't you know, though? It's easier to talk to people that you don't know than you do know, because they don't judge the opportunity based on what they know about you. And even if you're a great person, your friends, your relatives, your neighbors think that they know more than you, and they think, oh, geez, if it's that great, why do you need me? We see that's not the case with people that you don't know. And we have to work with large numbers because probability works in your favor when you work with large numbers. And the probability is that you will find the right 2 to 4 people. So be clear about this. It's not about just putting 10 people on a list and trying to get them on. It's about putting 100 to 300 people on a list and screening through them, just like we would do in any other business, a sports team, or in the arts, to find the very best players, your first string players, your vice presidents. And then in that way, we're not dependent on any single individual. Now, you see, when you only have a few people, you're dependent on them getting in, which kind of propagates desperation, and people can tell when you're desperate, just like a dog can tell when you're afraid of it. We don't want to be dependent on anybody. We're not trying to get them in. We're just getting them to evaluate it. So by developing a possibility list and starting to talk to these people and cultivate the relationship and interacting with them and dialoguing with them and letting them ask a few questions, we start to develop prospects. The ones that become interested, just like the nuts are rising to the top, are becoming your prospects. And you'll end up from that with what I call the top 10 list. Now, this is an ongoing process. It doesn't end. People that are possibilities, as we cultivate them, constantly are turning in to prospects because they're expressing interest or curiosity. Now that they're a prospect on your top 10 list, we can now focus on what we're going to say to recruit them, to get them to look at the plan, to approach them about sitting down and evaluating the opportunity. It might be a three-way call. It might be a two-on-one by bringing your sponsor just over to see them. Or going with somebody in your downline to go see them. There might be a specific type of approach that we want to work on. And I call this whole thing a process of natural selection, where the people that are right for the business select themselves into the business by responding right and then wanting to try it. And it's really a foolproof methodology, and it's just that simple if you get it straight in your mind and you do it right. We start with our names list. We're using the 3-foot rule. The 3-foot rule simply means that anyone that comes within 3 feet of you, you get in a conversation with. We can use ads. everyone can refer people. Like I said, not everybody's ready for this or right for this, but everybody knows two people who are. They know people in direct sales. They know people in network marketing. They know people that are trying to go into business from home on the internet. These are excellent people. And then, of course, kickoffs. Kickoffs, we're inviting people that we know, acquaintances, people from work, neighbors, relatives. And in the process, we're developing unlimited possibilities. From those unlimited possibilities, people will respond positively or with curiosity or interest, and that gives you your top 10 list. And if we simply show the plan four times a month, top 10 list, we're going to get at least one new distributor per month. And remember, we're not in the business of convincing people. We're in the business of sorting through people so that we find the interested ones, the best ones. But it's a very natural process. If you understand the three-foot rule and the form method, it's impossible not to have possibilities. The only way you can't have possibilities is to refuse to do it, to refuse to be aware of it, to refuse to focus on it. So then I would ask you, do you really believe in this thing? Do you really want the 2 to 3 year plan? But you see, the form method is simply anybody you come in contact with and have conversation with. You talk about their family. You talk about their occupation. You talk about what they like to do for recreation, which leads to money. But regardless of that, anybody that you come into 3 feet of, whether it be in a store, a clerk, the person at dry cleaners, a convenience store, people that you meet, go to the PTA meeting or church or drop your kids off at soccer practice, people can only talk about 3 things when you run into them. People generally chit-chat. And in their chit-chat, they begin by talking about what's happening, the weather, the ball game, the news. And within 2 minutes of doing that, they always end up either wishing, talking about what their wishes are. I wish I didn't have to work. I wish I could do this. I wish I could get away from this cold weather. Or they talk about how rotten things are, how they don't like their job, how they're working too much, how they hate their boss, whatever. They talk about 1 of 3 things, what's happening, what they wish, or how rotten things are. And if they talk about what's happening for more than 2 minutes, they end up talking about what they wish, or they start complaining, talking about how rotten things are. So we all go on our daily routines. Let's suppose stop by the convenience store every morning to get coffee. And I walk in there and I see this clerk every day. He's not going anywhere. And, we chit-chat. And one morning we're talking about the weather, and he's complaining that it's so cold and he wishes he could go to Florida, but he has to work all the time. So I start teasing him, say, come on, you love it here. You know it, and you love this job. And he says, man, what are you, crazy? You know, if I didn't have this second job, I wish I didn't have this second job, and I wish I could make enough money that I could go on a vacation or even move to Florida. And here's my response. I say, geez, I can understand that. I used to feel the same way and used to be in the same position. I sure am glad I found something where I don't have to worry about that anymore, and I can take off whenever I want and live wherever I want. Now, the person that's wrong for the business kind of fades into the background and kind of backpedals and acts like you're crazy. And mentally to that person, not verbally, I say, go die. Now, I'm being a little facetious. What I mean by that is they're dead anyway. They're mentally dead. At least half the people look at you and say, what do you mean by that? How can you do that? I say, you wouldn't be interested. You love your job here. He said, no, man, I'm working 2 jobs. I said, it takes ambition. What do you mean by ambition? Say, you got to want more than just working a. He said, man, I want more. I'm working 2 jobs and going to school. I said, it takes vision. See, I'm teasing with him. He says, what do you mean it takes vision? I said, you have to have enough vision to realize that there's got to be more to life than working for 45 years and ending up broke, because that's what most people do. After working for 45 years, they get a half-pay pension. How are they going to live on a half-pay pension when they couldn't even live on full pay? And the guy kind of laughs. He says, hey, listen, I'm busy. I got to go. But if you're really interested, next time I come in, mention it to me. So the next time I come in, he says, hey, Mr. Reitinger, what's this thing you were talking about? I said, John, what am I going to do? If I was to tell you who's going to get my coffee in the morning, man, tell me. Somebody else can get your coffee. So I'll tell you what, John, if you're really that interested, I don't have time right now. Write down the 5 best people that you can think of that are ambitious. And let me take a look at it, because I've found out that you can tell an awful lot about somebody by the type of people that they identify as being ambitious and forward-looking. And I just like to see what you think as a little litmus paper test. And next time I come in, he has those people on the, you know, the list. So, see, he's starting to recruit me. And I could give him 100 different examples like this. But the point is that you can't say the wrong thing to the right person. If someone's right for the business, even if you say something wrong or slip up, they're going to ask another question. And if you slip up again, they're going to ask another question. And if you slip up again, they're going to say, I don't understand. Can we get together? Or can you take me to your leader? Or can you give me some material? Or can you give me a tape? And you give them a Lead the Parade tape. And by the same token, you can't say the right thing to the wrong person. I don't care how good you are at the business or how slick your approach is. If they're wrong for it, they're going to come up with another question to find a reason not to look. And they're going to come up with another sarcasm or snide comment because they're mentally constipated and they're not right for it. Real truth of the matter is, folks, and you got to learn this and you got to take it to heart and you got to believe it. You can't say the wrong thing to the right person, and you can't say the right thing to the wrong person. You can't say the wrong thing to the right person, and you can't say the right thing to the wrong person. So when in doubt, blurt it out, you see. And it's not so much what you say. It's the sincerity and confidence that you say it with. But you see, anywhere you go, there's going to be three things that people talk about. So you need to understand this. They're going to talk about what's happening, how rotten things are, or the way they wish things were. And when they start complaining or they start wishing, ask questions. Get them to talk about it. Feed the pain or feed the dream. And they're giving you ammunition. They're laying all their cards on the table to make your job, to show them the concept, easy. It's incredible. And when they say, well, what's it about? Or, geez, I can't stand my job. And I say, well, you know, I understand how you feel. I used to feel the same way. I sure am glad I found a way where I don't need to have a job. I'm on my way to being able to retire in the next couple years. I can't help that they brought up the business, right? It's not my fault. I didn't go after them. They brought up the business. And if you believe in Market America, and you've practiced a little bit so that you can dialogue and you have an answer to what is it, it's impossible not to get prospects. They actually recruit you. In fact, don't we all have daily and weekly routines? Let me show you how impossible it is not to fill the bean jar, how impossible it is not to get possibilities and end up recruiting. I believe that you actually have to try not to do this. If you're aware at all, or if you are focused on this, and you really have the desire to be successful, it's impossible not to develop possibilities. Because every week or every day, you're going to the post office, you stop by the gas station, don't you? You have a UPS man that drops off products on a weekly basis. You got to go to the dry cleaners. You drop the kids off at school. Go to PTA meeting, you go to church on Sunday, you go to a restaurant a couple times a week, go to the supermarket, you go drop the kids off at soccer practice, something breaks in your house and you got to go to the appliance store, you're always running out to the convenience store, and the list goes on and on and on. We have this daily routine. Now, I found something out a long time ago that was a tremendous revelation. These people that you see over and over again, daily or weekly, aren't going anywhere. They're going to be there next week. They're going to be there tomorrow. So I don't have to get them the first time I talk to them. And when I first am talking to someone, I may not even know their name, but I put them down on the list, the possibility list. It might be the guy at the gas station that was complaining that he has to work a second job and he wishes he could make enough money on his first job and just get a sailboat and go out on the weekends. Well, man, what a beautiful possibility. And I put that guy down, the guy at the golf station, you know, that was complaining about the second job and wishes he could have a sailboat. The next time, I get to know his name, and he's starting to ask questions, and I'm cultivating that possibility. You know, by the next time, I find out that he goes to school at night, and he's trying to become an accountant so he can make more money, but he's just starting out, and hey, this guy's a perfect possibility. And he's starting to ask me what this is, and I might give him a Lead the Parade tape. And he's beginning to turn into a prospect. You see, as we go through our weekly routine, we're seeing these people over and over again. And possibilities are everywhere you go when you're in this business. You're always at work. You're always on the job. You're always in the business. Every time you run an errand, every time something breaks in your house, what is there, a conspiracy against me? I'm the only person that has stuff break all the time, and then service people come out. They're excellent possibilities. I love what Lauren says to them. After they do a job, you know, she's checking on it. They do the job well. She says, you know, you do such great work. It's a shame that you're not getting paid what you're worth. And they look at her, what do you mean? She says, well, you should be making at least $2,100 a week. And they say, well, I don't make nearly that. She says, well, geez, you should. You take such pride in your work. You do such a great job. She says, well, how'd I ever be able to do that? And she says, well, my husband teaches people how to make $2,100 a week. In fact, he's taught thousands how to do it. What a great opportunity. You see, every time you buy something, there's a possibility. Every time you go shopping, you're running into people and somebody's handling your order. Hey, another possibility. There's people while you're shopping that you run into. Every time you do something with your family, you have an opportunity to find new possibilities. And every time you go out or socialize, every time you drop your kids off at activities, and every time you do anything or go anywhere, you should be prospecting. And when you do this correctly and you learn how to dialogue and you look for the opportunities, because when they talk about what's happening, they're going to end up wishing or complaining. All you need to do is massage your mind. Don't be like a big St. Bernard lap dog and jump on top of them as soon as they ask you a question. Say, oh, you'd be so good at my business, and slobber all over them and scare them off. Remember, they're going to be there next week. And cultivate the relationship. Ask them questions. Get them talking about themselves. When they wish, feed the wish. When they complain, feed the pain. Feed the complaint. They're giving you ammunition. So you're actually going to end up being recruited when you tell them, geez, I understand how you feel. I used to feel the same way. I sure am glad I found a way where I don't have to do that anymore. I'm on my way to being able not to have to live like that, or I'm on my way to being able to do what I want. And by doing that, by cultivating possibilities, you actually become recruited. Do you understand this? They actually recruit you. So when we're filling the bean jar and we're doing this correctly, all you need to do is cultivate the possibilities and learn how to be recruited. But it all begins with a possibility list. And remember, there's more people that you don't know than you do know. And they're easier and they're more receptive because they don't know you. Hey, my neighbors don't think I know anything either. You know, my friends think that I don't know anything either. I'm no different than you. There's more people that we don't know than we do know, and they don't judge the opportunity by what they know about us. And no matter how successful you are, the truth of the matter is familiarity breeds contempt and misery loves company. You think your friends and your relatives and work associates want to see you go out and make an extra $100,000 to $300,000 a year and not have to work and have control over your time? No. Misery loves company. They're going to rain on your parade. It's easier for them to discourage you than to say, hey, what about me? Let me try it. And if you do make it, then that shows them up, and they really have to look within. They got to look in the mirror. So let's work on possibility, Liz. We just add two names per day from people that we meet in our daily routine, or by rekindling old relationships. Call someone up and say, hey, John, this is a voice out of your past. Remember, we used to work together over at XYZ Company. Hey, something happened that brought your name to mind, and I had to give you a call. Maybe you can help me out. So if we're adding two names per day religiously, then that's like going to work. If you didn't do two names that day, you didn't show up for work. You're not really in the business. 30 days of doing that, you have 60 names per month. Now, if you had 60 names every month of people that were getting interested, that you were cultivating, would you have some people to call? Would you have some people interested or curious that you could call to show the plan to? And if you were showing the plan a couple times a week, would you be recruiting any new go-nows? So we cultivate the possibilities, and automatically they become prospects because they were suspects when they started asking questions and getting curious. Then they became prospects as we cultivated the relationship.
This concludes this portion of the program. To continue, please insert the next CD.